power of our diplomacy. Diplomacy.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a really big deal.
The strength of our diplomacy.
Oh, that's a really good point.
Yeah.
It does sound fun.
One. Deadline.
And welcome to episode 24 of Diplomacy Cast.
Can you believe it?
Got to be the awesomest layoff you guys have ever experienced.
I really think, you know, when you put something on the shelf for a little while, like a fine bottle of wine.
Yes.
And you take it off, and it has a nice even number named after a hit, a television series. I think it's a winner.
Previously on 24. Sweet, I got to do it. Episode 24 of Diplomacy Cast. Diplomacy Cast is a podcast about the board game Diplomacy.
And we talk about it.
And we do. And we're gonna. Again.
Lots.
Totally. Today, we're going to dust off some emails that have been sitting and awaiting.
Some old, some new.
Some old, some new. It's true. Some within the last half hour.
I know.
Which blew my mind a little bit. That, like, people were still attempting to write. Like, throwing things against a wall and hoping that something broke through the wall, which is my failure to read emails on a regular basis. I may be deputizing.
I think you should.
Soon.
I think we should fashion some sort of star, maybe an anchor.
Yeah.
And, you know, give that to somebody.
Yeah.
Check the emails.
Yeah, definitely.
But then, you know, they're just going to email you to say that there's email. And then we're in the same problem.
They can text me.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Okay.
That's actually on my body.
Problem solved.
There we go. So we're going to do some of that. We're going to talk about Nathan's recent trip to DixieCon.
Which was excellent.
I'm glad to hear. I wish I could have been there too, but I'll have to live vicariously through you and back in those days when I actually played Diplomacy.
When's the last time you went to a tournament again?
January.
Oh, January.
Yeah, yeah, that was all right. Our topic for today, our super, I don't know. Power plays isn't right.
It's not power plays. It's something we've been talking about doing for a while.
Yeah. How to run a good house game.
Yeah. Just some of our experiences doing this for a long time, doing a lot of house games, you know, that kind of stuff.
Exactly.
Any questions, tricks.
Any feedback, any of that stuff, press at diplomacycast.com, facebook.com/diplomacycast, iTunes, search for DiplomacyCast.
So if you Google DiplomacyCast...
If you could Bing it.
You could Bing it.
You could, well, I mean, I guess you could.
Yeah, no, there's lots of ways to get in touch with us. So even though we don't answer lickety-split,
no.
We do eventually answer, and we're not dead.
No, and neither is my cat.
Even Sweet.
Though she's like 16, but she's still yowling in the background.
Man, that's what makes Diplomacy Cats beautiful.
We'll be back after this. DixieCon. Yeah, the circuit.
Yeah, it was good, man. It was excellent. I mean, it was it's in Chapel Hill.
Yeah,
so it's a bit of a slog from Seattle.
Yeah, a bit of a history, I guess. They've been doing that exact same tournament in that exact same spot for
27 years.
Oof.
Yeah, it's in the bowels of a University of North Carolina building.
Yep.
Pretty nice, though. I mean,
well, same one it was at when I was there like 8 years ago.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Yeah. And then you get a dorm room that I shared with somebody that I don't think I ever talked to all weekend.
Nice.
I mean, I might have mumbled something, but, you know, it was Brian Lee. I didn't really get a chance to talk to him because he was, you know, a responsible person who went to sleep.
Weird.
And then, you know.
There's about a million, like, college bars right down the street from there, as I recall.
Yes.
And so
yes, and it felt very old, in fact.
Yeah, yeah.
There was a point where we went out, and everyone in the group said, you know, that place is just too loud. So I've arrived. Okay, great. Okay, yep. So this is being old.
This is what it's like to be one of those old dudes that kicks people's young dudes' butts at Diplomacy.
Yep.
This is what it's like.
Yeah. All right. That place is just too loud. To be fair, they were blasting Blink-182 at 182 decibels.
Oof.
It was pretty intense.
That's 182 times of hell.
So that was all right. But tournament-wise, David Hood runs a great show.
Yes.
You know, the key thing about this event is it's probably the only one, it's the only one that I'm aware of that where they do specifically do a lot of other games and Diplomacy.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas you can go to a tournament, like a big tournament, like a Gen Con or something, and play a bunch of other games, and there's a lot of other stuff going on.
Yep.
But this is really a diplomacy tournament that has a sub-Iron Man tournament where, you know, people play other games, and you record what you do, and somebody wins. Rick Desper won the Iron Man.
Oh, very nice.
Yes. I don't know how.
Did he play the Crayon Train game?
The Crayon Train
game. I remember a lot of people playing the Crayon Train game.
Do you mean Ticket to Ride? Or do you mean Crayon Train game?
No, I don't think I mean either of those, actually. I mean, like, Train Master of Thoth or something. Like, it's like, what are these games?
I have no idea. There was a million games people were playing. Yeah,
okay.
So.
Okay.
But that was, you know, that it's a nice mix. And what I think that encourages is a lot of younger players to come because they have other things to do. And, you know, dad can bring son and son can do some other things while dad plays this. Or they, you know, there was a bunch of, that was actually really cool. So there was a lot of really young blood.
Yeah.
It was nice, really nice to see.
David Hood's always been very good at kind of keeping it going. And
well, it's part of, he's just so genial.
Yeah.
You know, he's just.
They can't resist his southern charm.
No, it's just that it's not that intimidating. Yeah. Like, you know, and, it, you know, it's fairly friendly. And what was nice is, at the same time, there were also people there like, you know, Graham Woodring, who has been playing at DixieCon since he was like 14.
Yep.
You know, probably, you know, years and years and years. And there's a bunch of people there like that. Oh, yeah, my first game was at here. They had a little thing at the end like, oh, my first game was here at. And I was like, really? Oh, okay, that's good to know.
Yeah.
So that was nice. So. Anyway, all in all, good things. Any specific questions you have about
it? Well, they like to hear about the boards, I'm sure.
There weren't any solos. My boards, I solidly performed in the middle of the pack like solidly. I do. Top of the curve. King of Curve Mountain, as
nice.
I like to say.
Nice. Same scoring system as always, like pretty heavily draw-based.
Oh, it's all draw-based. It's draw-based center count modifier. It's like, oh, well, if you draw with more centers, you get.
So, yeah, it's like, it's something like 60 points for being part of the three-way and then 4 points per dot.
We ran it at WAC 2 years ago or something.
And people can vote themselves out of a draw.
Yeah, absolutely.
In order to keep a few points of dots. Yeah.
Absolutely. And so, you know, you had a bunch of people voting themselves out. You had a ton of three-way draws, which is almost always what happens in those systems.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone soloed. I could be wrong about that. It's possible. No, if someone had soloed, there would not have been a tie for first place, which there was.
Which is super weird.
Which has never happened before in the history of DixieCon.
Co-champions, David Hood said, F it, and just went out and bought another trophy.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's how he rolled. He doesn't believe in some other place also tied, like sixth place or something weird. Like, just there's a bunch of ties. So, that apparently had never happened before.
So it was like three-way with a total of 31 centers between centers, whatever it was. Yeah.
And then, you know, and it turned out that they just ended up with the exact same number of centers overall. I mean, that's what you, I mean, that's how it works.
Yeah.
So no
other tiebreaker. Yeah.
That was no other tiebreaker.
Yeah. Definitely. I would have made him race around the block.
I would, push-ups, go!
Yeah.
But it was good. It was thoroughly pleasant. I played every round.
Who were the two?
Adam Siegel
and
Tom Coburn.
Friend of the show? Tom Coburn's never been on the show.
No.
He should.
He might.
You asked him, right?
Oh, yeah, totes.
Oh.
No, of course I didn't. I was, you know, always nice to hear from people who are like, hell yeah, I listen to the show, etc. So, you know, despite the fact that you've been not available to do the show because you've been unavailable to do the show.
Unavailable,
There are still people that are fans. So
I've been pursuing my other interest of Bulgarian epic poetry.
While locked in a rubber room.
Yes. Yes. No.
But it was really great. I mean, and there weren't any like terrible incidences. I don't have any stories about, you know, screaming matches or anything like that. It's just a little bit. It's not low key, but it's just above.
Anything interesting happen on a board?
That
you played?
Diplomacy
wise, strategy wise.
I didn't get a.
Any good openings?
I'm trying to think. Well, you have to. I mean, as I mentioned, there's a lot of newer players there, so you got to sort of factor that in. So there, I mean, my first board, and I wish I could remember the details, but there was just some opening that was just, it just threw the whole board off. I think Italy held everything, and except for Venice, and move Venice to Naples or something, or no, moved it not to Piedmont, maybe to Tuscany, like just things that.
Oh, we talked about a similar opening in the last episode.
I know. I had a ton of jokes like that over the weekend. I was like, hey, I heard about this great opening from France.
Yeah.
But no, like the Italian, I think, did something just wacky where the Austrians ended up just exploding on that board.
Yeah.
So there were just there was quite a bit of that. But you know, in order to balance that out, people had to play a little bit harder. But also, if they happened to be positioned well, they just did well. So I wish I'm not saying it was bad diplomacy. The diplomacy was fine. It just wasn't. Like super dynamic, like, oh my god, I didn't see that coming.
It was sort of just like grind through.
It was a lot of grinding. So in my boards, I ended up on a 3-way, then I ended up in on like a, I don't know, a 5-way, or I voted myself, and then another one where I just got just destroyed.
Oh, well, that one will be fun to talk about.
Well, I ended up with just a couple of centers left on like some sort of stalemate line.
Oh, or, yeah.
You know,
and all it was right. Just I like, take it back. It's not fun.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just like, ha, 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 I stopped you. Victory's mine.
Yeah.
I'll vote myself out.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess, you know, here's what I'll say. There was one somewhat dramatic moment on the Friday night. That's right. So, I don't remember all the details.
Yeah.
But Jim O'Kelly was on my board.
Yeah.
And something happened in which there was a lot of tension. There's a lot of tension running high on the board. And, you know, because we'd kind of ground out some of the other people. And I think it was Adam Siegel was involved. And there was some... They're just trying to end the game. Couldn't end the game. And Jim O'Kelly, who was quite a large power on the board.
On any board he's on.
Well, on most boards. Yeah. You know, there was so much animosity on the board. And we couldn't get anywhere. And people were starting to get cranky.
Mm-hmm.
He had... I'd have to look it up, but he must have had 8-9 centers. He was like, I propose a draw where I'm not in it.
Oh.
And it was just like, that's it. I'm out. And it freaking passed.
Did it really?
Oh yeah, it passed.
I've done that and then vetoed it myself.
I think it was a 4-way, which where it was heading towards a 4-way, and Adam was trying to throw the game to somebody else. And you know, at the end of the day, people were upset, and Jim was upset enough that he was just like, you know what?
Nobody's having fun.
No one's having fun. I'll fall on the sword. 3-way draw. Let's go.
Yeah, that sounds like something I'd do. Sort of, and then just, like, cry about it. And
yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I understand. But, yeah, like, sometimes the game can get not fun.
Yeah.
Like, especially at tournaments, like, people can, like, really feel aggrieved.
Right.
And at that point...
And I'll say I was on the board and I didn't feel aggrieved at all. To me, it was like, oh, we're just warming up.
Yeah.
But I'm used to a slightly different style of play.
Yeah, totally.
A little less coast, a little bit like, no, we're not going to play until 3 in the morning and, like, hate each other.
We're just starting to torture ourselves. Oh,
no.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think it was Siegel's turkey and, you know... He wanted Jim out of the game to vote a draw, or he was just going to keep playing. And Jim was like, fine.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess that was a little bit dramatic.
Yeah.
That was the only dramatic thing I saw all weekend. But kudos to Jim. He handled it very well. And, you know, Adam did, you know, he was playing for his position. And
yeah.
He did fine, too. I mean, no hard feelings anywhere. But it was...
Yep.
It was interesting to watch. I didn't expect that result.
Yeah, no, definitely. That's a good one. Let's see. Anything else?
No. I mean, the only other thing to talk about for DixieCon, just fair warning. So I get there on Friday, and I'm hungry.
Oh yeah.
So Dave Moetsky, friend of the show, he's like, "Let me help you out."
Oh, yeah.
And so
he gets pretty excited about DixieCon every year, doesn't
he? Yeah. And so he goes, "I'll get you a little something." And he goes to this place, I think it's called Time Out. And it's just right over, and it's this, like, southern, shorter cook place.
Oh, yeah.
I actually remember. And he got me, he's like, "I'll get you a chicken sandwich." What he got me was a whole chicken
in
with three eggs in a 5-pound biscuit.
Yeah.
He got me two of them.
And he paid $3 each for
it. Yes, exactly. Yeah, and I tried to eat it. I couldn't eat it. It falls apart in my hand. It's a whole, like, chicken breast. I mean, it is a pound of chicken. It is ridiculous.
I know.
I can't even get through it all. I don't eat again after I eat that for 16, 18 hours.
Yeah.
There's just, I don't need any food because I'm hibernating. It was insane.
North Carolina is kind of amazing that
it's way. I had no idea what I was getting
into. I actually remember eating a couple of those with a friend of the show, Brian Sheldon, after we'd been drinking for many, many hours, and having a conversation about if we'd have gone home to Manhattan and opened a store that sold those on the Lower East Side, we could charge like $14 each for them. It wouldn't be a problem. We'd be so rich.
How do you guys do this? Okay, I'm going to take this and triple or quadruple the price.
Yeah.
Have a great day.
Yeah, exactly. I remember. And then there's sort of like a big barbecue feast
that
tends to close down Dick's Con. It's only a 3-round tournament, right?
Yeah, it's only 3 rounds. Plenty of time to play some other stuff or do some other things. So yeah. I would highly recommend it to anybody who wants to go out there. He runs a great show. And I believe Worlds is out there next year. So it should be a
year
big...
After?
For 2014.
Holy cow. All right, I'm going.
Oh, yeah. Now you'll go.
Yeah. What a world. What? I don't have time for this small time world.
Oh, yeah. Small time.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I only go to the big stuff.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Like you went to Worlds this year.
No, I went to the Root Canal this year.
All right, let's move on. All right, moving on. What are we talking about next? Email?
Yeah.
Email!
Hot off the press?
Yeah, people don't use the press anymore.
Drop it like it's hot.
Oh, so if we just dropped it like it was hot?
If we just dropped it like it was hot, you can do better than that.
Drop it like it's hot.
Off the press.
I'm not saying that.
All right, cool.
Just two pieces of email-related business here that I gotta get.
Is this official business?
Extremely official.
Okay,
yeah, I stamped this.
Okay.
Confidential to Spencer in Canada. Sorry we didn't do an episode in time to give you some advice on running your first tournament ever. Please do write us again and let us know how that tournament went without our awesome advice.
Also, alternatively, you could use Facebook because I actually look at that.
Yeah, or you could write to our new email troll who has not yet been named.
Not a troll, not a deputy.
A troll PD. also confidential to Russ in Iowa. Well, you know, sorry, I totally didn't play in your online game that I said I was going to play in.
Is this the one we solicited forever to get?
And he was the only one who actually invited me to play in the game, and I was like, "Yep, I'm doing it." And then I don't know. And then I suffered a stroke immediately after recording that episode, and didn't remember anything that had happened.
Oh my god! Hey, Russ.
Sorry.
Ping me sometime, and I'll rope him into the game.
Yeah.
It'd be great.
Well, I mean, they've probably played 9 games since then, but, like,
well, I'm sure they're gonna have another one.
I'll play a game. If I have to.
You do have to now.
All right. You're right. I will.
That's sad.
It's super sad. I'm super lame. That was why it was confidential.
Yeah. Oh, good. I'm glad we only talked to Russ individually there.
Yeah. Everyone else, turn off your radio.
All right. Actual emails.
Yes. From our buddy Bernard, who I think maybe got a little tired of waiting and
weird.
Just decided, like, I'm just going to send them, like, an awesome conversation topic and just make them do it. And he was so, you know, polite and European about the whole thing.
Of course he was.
Yes. Figured it was time to drop you a word again. Hope all's well down there in Seattle, and you both had a good time at WAC.
And we did.
Just wanted to say to Eric, if you're still looking for people to play, all right, I'm not going to read that part.
Yes, he is still looking, because he has now, like, a mitzvah he has to do.
Yeah, exactly. Let's see, great couple of episodes lately. I was listening to the Knowing Your Opponent episode a while ago and wanted to give my 2 cents about the pre-made alliance. Curious to hear your thoughts. All right. As you've already said, people automatically becoming allies when they are put on the same board is probably pretty rare. I do think that there is something to be said for being at something of a disadvantage being a new guy among people who know each other well. Say you're a newbie in one of the Western powers, and the other two people are people who have been in the tournament scene for years. Things like Western triples aside, they will have two options. Ally with the other guy against you, assuming you were the easier target, and an alliance with an experienced player will just be more efficient, or ally with you against the other guy. This has a disadvantage that they may bet on the wrong horse, because you might totally screw up your orders, for example. On the other hand, the idea could be that it's not too bad to get rid of a bigger threat early, and then beat the newbie on tactics, or people might just enjoy trying something new.
Which, you know, right. is the nice way of saying it.
I think there's something to be said for both. I only think that many people have the perception that the players who prefer the first option outnumber the ones who prefer the second. This is this because people are just reluctant to throw in their lot with an unproven concept. You.
Yeah.
I got this impression because I have heard from a few people that even though they have been playing face-to-face for years, they often get jumped when they entered an environment where people just didn't know them. That's it. Keep up the good work, Bernard. Really... Oh, did I skip a paragraph?
Yeah, you totally did.
I totally skipped a paragraph. Of course, that all doesn't mean that those alliances are set in stone. You should just work a little harder / better to convince your neighbors of your competency. That's just not so easy to do within the limited amount of time in 1901 when you're trying not to become the odd man out. That's it. Keep up the good work, Bernard.
Well, I couldn't agree with Bernard more.
Yeah.
Like, I totally agree with this.
Really well broken down in terms of, like, the conversation we have a lot and we've had on the show before, but go ahead.
No, I think it's really summed up well here. I think the problem that people might have, that players might have, is accepting this reality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just have to accept that there's two logical ways someone can go with this, and you just need to prod them toward the one that is in your advantage, that is to your advantage, that isn't attacking you. And that can be really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And to the point that I think that it's easy to say, that's not fair, I'm getting jumped.
Yeah.
You know, in a pure game, et cetera, whatever excuse you want to throw out there. But at the end of the day, it's your job. Your job to convince someone else.
It's your job to make the case.
Yeah. And to convince.
What you can't do is just go into it with the acceptance that's probably how it's going to come down.
That's terrible.
What you have to do is work as hard or harder, because those guys who are experienced tournament veterans, they're not just coasting, because they've got a guy as their neighbor who may be a guy that they worked with before, maybe someone that they've known for years. But the one thing I can assure you of is they do not freaking trust that guy.
Almost never.
There's no way that guy has never stabbed them.
Right.
You've never stabbed them.
Right.
So they're immediately on guard. And so your job is to go, okay, sure, it might be easy to work with him. You know, you don't necessarily say it this way because you just don't. But, like, you don't say, hey, this is, you know, you guys are going to work together and come kill me. What you say is, oh, so you played with that guy before, huh? Yeah? A few times? Yeah? Have you ever worked well together? Yeah? Has he ever stabbed you? Yeah? What happened that time? You know, like, bring up the bad memories.
Oh, yeah.
Because that can work. Like,
it's at least a starting point.
Mm-hmm.
And I will, and I think this just ties into the event I just was at DixieCon.
Yeah.
It's not Spring 1901 that you lay the groundwork in Spring 1901.
Mm-hmm.
But it's Fall 1901 where you get to make your case.
Sure.
Because you need to do one set of orders competently.
Yep.
And I mean, yes, they're the most basic orders, and there's a million openings out there, and it's not much to go on.
Yep.
But I'll tell you, if you screw those ones up, you're done.
Yep.
There's no way at that point that someone's going to go, oh, that's the horse I'm betting on. I was just in Louisville. I was just at Churchill Downs. I bet on a horse that fell down. Seriously. You don't do that. Yeah. You know that's what's going to happen.
Don't be the horse that falls down. Yeah.
Didn't place, going to say.
Don't even look like the horse that's going to fall down.
Right?
Oh, God. Yeah.
Sorry, that's a distracting story. That's the point. Like, that's where the rubber meets the road.
And the best way to do that, like in practical terms, I would say, or like one of the really good ways to do that in practical terms, is go, okay, you guys know each other. What's he selling you? You know, what does he want to do? Well, and they'll usually say, well, he wants to come kill you, you know, because they want to make him look like the bad guy. And
sure.
Okay, what's the plan? Okay, well, I'm supposed to go to Burgundy. Okay, you're supposed to go to Burgundy. Instead, let's do this and pitch something not stupid,
Yeah, don't.
But, like, a little bit outside the box. Right. You know, say, okay, well, you guys could do it that way. You could kind of, you know, just, like, work together and make the sort of standard let's go kill France moves here. Or we could try this.
Right.
And this doesn't have to be, like, wow, you made this up yourself. But it should be something that is sort of, like, can demonstrate early on, I know what I'm doing. I know tactics. If he's doing this, he's not going to see this coming.
Right. And right? Honestly, the best way to break it up is in that opening pitch is to do something that lets the person preserve their relationship with the other, with the person that they're playing with. Like, we're just assuming there's an automatic line.
You can do that too, yeah.
Yeah, just do something where, okay, this doesn't deviate from your course. You're not having to choose a side yet. Mm-hmm. But let's do something where you get to at least see mm-hmm. what's going to happen. Or, you know, instead of going to Burgundy, why not go to Ruhr?
Yeah.
Just go to Ruhr. It puts you on top of Belgium and Holland. Gives you some advantages there.
Yep.
I'll do this. It will make... You can tell you're the person that you're... That I'm supporting myself in Burgundy, so you can't go there anyway. Yeah. And you can let the person have a choice, and it sounds like you're working together.
Mm-hmm. And really, pick one of them.
Just pick one.
If you feel like two guys are going to jump you, don't try and make them both happy.
No.
Just go with your gut. Go with which one you think is, like, a little less likely to want to kill you.
Or maybe you just have a better rapport with.
Whatever. Nicer guy. So sure. The one who laughed at your joke. Whatever. You know, pick one and make that the guy that you're just... Before he even has a chance to just sort of go with what you expect the default to be, which is working with the other person, just be more interesting. You know, just like with your tactics, with your personality, with your diplomacy, like show them that you have a plan. Show them that you have an idea. Tell them exactly what you're going to do. Do that in spring of 01 and then say, see, I'm serious about this other plan.
Right.
Let's go kill that dude. That works a lot.
Right.
I've been to a lot of tournaments, and in a lot of tournaments, I've killed a lot of newer players. I've killed a lot of strangers at tournaments.
Sure.
And I've killed them early, and I've killed them sometimes aligning with people that I've known for years. I'm not going to say that I'm immune to that. But the times that I haven't done that are when the guy that I've never met before has a plan and has something that he says, no. I want to work with you instead of just sitting here and waiting to get killed by the two of you. I want to work with you and go kill that guy. Not, I want to wait and see. I want to, I'm kind of testing my options. I just kind of want to open neutral. If you feel like you're in that situation, you won't be in that situation 100% of the time at tournaments. But if all of a sudden they call the boards and it's like, England, Eric Mead, France, Nathan Barnes, Germany, you... You know, like,
and you're like, wait a minute.
Yeah. You're like, this is something okay. And like the whole room goes, ooh, because they all know those people. And, you know, like if you feel like you're in that situation, do something to shake that up. And remember that there's no mathematical way that you're going to be in that situation 100% of the time at a diplomacy tournament. Like, that your two closest neighbors are two cagey long-term tournament veterans.
And in addition, everything Eric said, great. Also, to piggyback off the math portion of it, sometimes you're going to guess wrong, and sometimes you're going to lose.
Yeah,
exactly. That's just going to happen.
Exactly.
Just because it happens once doesn't mean it's going to happen all the time. It might happen twice. It might happen three times in a row.
Yeah.
But that doesn't really, in the aggregate, mean anything. You just have to, you know, get back up, you know, sometimes just strike out.
Yeah, exactly.
And sometimes
cagey old veterans strike out, too, because they're surrounded by, like, they're Austria, and there's three new players in Russia, Turkey, and Italy, and they all the new players get together and say, let's just kill that guy first.
I've heard of him.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, it works both ways.
Yeah.
And I mean, it works both ways even... like levels of the game where everybody involved in the game is like a cagey old tournament veteran where they'll all be like, we should probably kill David Hood first here, you know.
But we just decide who's the most, I don't know what to do. Those are my favorite games because you're like, I have no idea. I want to kill everyone.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm just assuming that they all want to kill me and something just happens and then something else happens and somebody makes a mistake. And you know, that's how it works like at the higher levels. But I mean, even if you're on a board with six cagey old veterans that know each other incredibly well and you, you're actually a little more likely to benefit from that than they are, because they'll all be more afraid of each other than you. And so, anyway,
we don't want not to go on too long, but thanks for knowing, as always.
Long conversation about a very good email.
That we've touched, but that's, I think you did a really good job summing that up.
Yeah. All right, moving on. Kale. I've been running, he writes, "Hello, gents. I've been running an in-house game twice a year here in DC for the past couple of years. In the weeks leading up to each game, I listen to your podcast to get ready and pump myself up." Nice. Boom. We're like Eye of the Tiger, kind of.
We're more like the Tail of the Tiger.
Yeah, well.
Maybe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for educating me and making an entertaining and educational podcast. Keep it up.
We're working on it. We're trying.
Yes.
Don't make promises you can't keep.
I need podcast Viagra. If you're looking for questions, I'd like to know more about running and refereeing a game. In the last podcast, you discussed some exciting technological possibilities. I'd love to hear some pitfalls to avoid in reffing my home games and some more tips to make my home games even better.
Oh, perfect. So we're going to cover this today, right?
Yeah, that's true. I guess it kind of ties into the other. For my part,
your wish is granted, Kale.
Yes. And then he goes on to write about, for my part, he likes to cook food and grill burgers and that sort of thing. Let's answer this bit first, I guess, or I don't know. We can put this part off until later.
No, I think we should just, let's just put it off until later, because we're just going to end up repeating ourselves.
Yeah. So, well, hold that thought on the cooking food. We'll get to that in the next segment. Right. He also had another thing. I was impressed by your discussion of the significant point incentive for soloing at tournaments. It made me remember that most of our games ended up in some sort of a draw or understood winner. I hope the chalice incentive goes some way toward encouraging a solo victory.
Because he mentions that he's considering giving out a chalice of victory for
that
solo.
Yeah.
It's like Indiana Jones in The Last Crusade.
Yeah, it's something, and I know it's true, we have talked about it before, but like incentivizing people to solo.
Spent years talking about this.
Yeah. It's something people argue about, and there's no perfect answer for it. I think, you know, the game itself is a bit of a grind.
Yep.
You know, and a lot of times soloing is particularly a grind. What you want to do is, you know, yes, you want a scoring system that incentivizes soloing, but you also, you want an environment that incentivizes soloing too.
Yes.
You know, like you want to make the game continue to be fun as people try and solo. And so that's something that, you know, different scoring systems like that, all that sum of squares stuff that we talk about, like, you know, just try and be a ton bigger than your opponents. And then from there, maybe somebody will look at soloing because they're big.
Right.
And they're not that far away from it. I mean, I guess we've kind of done this topic a lot, but...
we've also, you know, people have been banging their heads against this idea for
decades.
There's
no perfect answer.
And no one's really found a good answer yet. Like, they found okay answers.
Yeah.
You know, give a lot of points for a draw. You know, do the sum of squares. Do the thing they did in Denver, which was the declining...
declining centers.
You know, make a solo only 15 after, you know, 12 years of play or something.
Yeah.
You know, everyone's really found a way to make it work.
Yeah. Like,
consistently.
Even like Dave Maletsky's idea, or at least like his meta idea of like a scoring system at a tournament where you get 1 million points per solo and everything else is tiebreakers. Basically, like you get 1 million points if you solo, and you get, you know, 50 points for a three-way draw and 12 points, you know, or like a point per dot past that or something, which I actually don't think is like a terrible idea.
It's not a terrible idea.
It's totally fine, but the fact is, I'm not sure you end up with that many more solos there.
I don't think you do.
A lot of it is psychological. A lot of it needs to be like the right conditions on the board, the right person at the right time with the right amount of caffeine and the right amount of beer.
I mean, I haven't run the numbers on how many solos we've had at WAC, but we run a different scoring system nearly every year, and we generally have
a couple of solos.
Yeah. Like if you look at the data over 10 years, 12 years of doing it.
Yeah.
That's it doesn't point, seem actually. To really change the number of solos, no matter how... I mean, you could argue that all the scoring systems WAC has run are crap, But
I remember a DIPCON from a few years ago that I went to where there was like five or six solos, just like a really remarkable amount of solos considering the size of the tournament. And it was that scoring system you just played under this weekend.
Yeah.
Where, or a couple of weeks ago where there was no...
No tiebreakers, no, no just solos. Draws.
Yeah, just draw-based, but for whatever reason, like, the boards happen that way. I mean, people will solo if they want to solo. Giving them extra hardware, I think, is cool. Like, you know, like, those Best Country awards actually do motivate people.
No, they actually do. I watched them motivate people this weekend, that in Dixiecon. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, well, I could stop now, but if I get two more, I get Best Turkey.
Yeah.
Okie dokie.
Yep.
I can probably grind out two more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it, I think those are great. Those are great ways of...
So, I don't know. It's an open topic if anybody thinks they've solved the riddle that's going to bewildering diplomacy tournament
people. Please for, let us know.
Yeah, how to make people solo at tournaments is...
Consistently.
Know. Yeah.
Like, in a way that just consistently encourages them that it's demonstrable.
Yeah.
Definitely. That would be great.
I think the answer might be have Andy Bartolone play on every single board. At a tournament. There'd be so many solos. Like, some of them would be him, some of them would be, like, but all of them would be somebody.
Well, and I think that's just, I mean, it's you hit on it early on. I think it's not the scoring system as much as it is the environment.
Yeah, definitely. Let's see, guys, it seriously took me about an hour to figure out you guys were joking. Masterfully done, felt like a good stab. Kevin Lewis.
Oh, I like Kevin Lewis.
Thanks, Kevin. Thanks,
yeah, Kevin. We're pretty proud of that.
Yeah, that April Fool's episode. It's like the hardest thing I've ever done.
Yeah. It was pretty good.
Okay.
All right.
Oh, there was one more.
Yes, that's right. This just came in.
Hot off the press. I've always wanted to use that when it was actually true.
This is from Zach Jarvey.
You read it.
He came up from where is he?
Reno.
And he came up to WAC. And I met him there, and we shook hands and whatnot. And he's, you know, 6 months later, he's emailing us to talk about how it went.
Yeah.
Apparently, it was a little bit harrowing. So I'm just going to... He's written us a great email that going to highlight. Because he says he himself set the hobby aside following the psychologically crippling experience that the WAC tournament provided as his introduction to the face-to-face hobby. And he highlights that the WAC recap did not include a rundown of my first board because it was his first face-to-face board, and unfortunately for him, I happened to be on it.
Yeah.
He says, perhaps I didn't recall it. Mr. Barnes did not recall it, and I don't. But that's, too, he does point out why. I was playing two boards on the opening night of the tournament, so I was a little, all over the place. But what I like about this is it looks like Mr. Jarvey ended at one. There's some great, this is a great game. I ended up with three, and, let's see what happened here. Oh, it was a solo by Chris Brand.
Oh, yeah. Italy.
It was Italy to my Austria.
And the German had 12 when that happened. Yes. So, ouch.
Yes. Yes. And Zach Jarvey ended up with one as Russia.
Yeah.
What he says is, and I love this, I can't remember most of the details, however, I thought I'd been playing rather well so far, and I managed not to get eliminated. And then, at some point in 1908 or 1909, Nathan Barnes had the unmitigated gall to propose a draw that excluded two of the players still on the board, of which I was one. I, a complete tournament newbie, responded to this blatant disregard to my very presence with the following. And I want to underscore this is all thanks to the podcast and specifically to host Eric Mead.
Yeah.
I knew exactly how to react. For 2 years now, the hosts of the show have made no secret of Eric Mead's heroic willingness and propensity to spitefully throw the game anytime that the game is decided to throw him.
My first face-to-face tournament.
I think it may have been an entire episode dedicated to the subject of throwing dots and or tantrums as a way of establishing diplomatic credits.
Yeah.
Yes. Congratulations. you, Eric Mead, have made an impact.
That's like our slogan, make it hurt more. This is like between you and me. That's the character pull.
Make it hurt. And so without even raising our seats, I looked Nathan Barnes straight in the eye, and I let him know that, I let him and the entire board know that I would accept no draw, that did not include myself, and that I was left with no other option. I would gladly help Chris Brand get to the solo. And at this point, Nathan's visible disgust at my inability to be reasonable and act in his own best interest was only exceeded by Chris's barely restrained elation, and I presume my own expression that it was either richly decadent self-satisfaction or a kind of nervously frightened defiance. Now, I will say, since I don't remember this board, I'm guessing I proposed the draw because I knew I was screwed. Yeah. And I just hoped that maybe I could ram through a cello, because ram through a draw, because, you know, I don't know what Chris was thinking. Well, I think I had a conversation with him afterwards, but, you know, he wasn't going to vote it down, I'm sure. But I thought maybe if I got to it early enough, he might be just like, oh, I'm done. I don't know. I was on two boards. I'm very sure that just looking at how this board, just looking at the final stats, you know, yeah. Eliminated in 1911, 1910, and 1907. Those three eliminations.
Yeah, there was sort of an issue of geography here. The final involved Germany at 12, Italy at 18, and you still at 3, which means something a little funky happened because, like, I mean, I assume he must have owned all of France.
Well, France was, France is gone. Yeah.
Like,
there was no way. There's no way I had any way.
How were you in this draw?
Not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all. And it looks like there was another couple years of play, so I probably had maybe 5 or 6 or something. And I'm assuming Russia had a couple
maybe
more.
Just encircled.
But there's no way. I mean, especially if Italy soloed, there's no way I had any leverage at all to get that draw through. But, you know, sometimes you got to ask. This is one of the reasons I wanted to read this email, not just for Zach, but just as a general thing, you know, and the way he's described it, I'm sure I tried to say, like, what are you dumb? This is obvious. You gotta vote for this draw right now. I mean, this is just how it's, pure bravado, pure just like,
just trying to let's see
if we can get this through.
Yep.
I mean, there's no way I had any business being in a draw with this is the final outcome. I mean, I don't care how good I was doing.
Yeah.
But I think it's important to know that it's a legit tactic. You want to just, if you think you can get it, make it happen, just be ballsy.
Yeah.
Do it.
Exactly. And the important part is, way to go, me. I'm rusty at this whole podcast.
Yeah, I know. Maybe if you did it more often.
The important part here is that the threat is there, you know, the I'm going to help Chris Brown solo part of that.
Yes.
Is there, when nobody's really said anything to you other than, yeah, we're going to kill you anyway.
Yeah.
And so just vote yourself out of the draw or something. And it sounds like that's what happened for Zach. It sounds like he was like, oh, wait, I'm dead either way. I could die to a draw where they're whittling me out, or I could die to a solo. Well, screw you, draw guys, because the point of that is, A, just to make it hurt more.
Make it hurt.
But B, also to make the draw guys maybe reconsider and go, oh, well, maybe we should help him instead of trying to whittle him out of this draw, and that way we won't lose to a solo. And so, it's like a simple, like, fine, I'm going to throw a tantrum and do this, but you're kind of trying to live you do it. And your second choice, if you don't get to live, is at least make it hurt.
Earn it.
Yeah.
Earn it, guys. You want me out? Take me out.
Yeah,
so I completely, I completely agree with Zach's tactic. I'm glad that he listened to the show enough to know, that he didn't get bullied by the other hosts of this show.
Into voting for some draw that was totally
Well, and there's no way I would have gotten voted out anyway. Brand knew he had me. I'm sure. I was playing Austria to his Italy. I was just mad I wasn't playing Italy.
Right.
And then there's another, he talks about, Zach goes on to talk about a couple of other games, but I only want to read just a little bit. It was round 2 game. We need not go into the lurid details, but suffice it to say the game is dragging on into 1909, that heartless John Jameson helped a cowardly Andy Hull manipulate an emotionally exhausted newbie into stabbing his only remaining Western ally just to make the game end a few turns earlier. Then, along with their other chosen straw man, Doug Moore, the three of them pressured the board into accepting a 3-way draw, excluding the same sad newmate who didn't even realize he had actually topped the board.
Goodness.
Right. So what I like about this, because the Austria, Italy, Russia, the Andy Hall, the John Jameson, the Doug Moore, 7-7-7, and Zach Jarvie,
8. Not in draw.
Not in the draw. So,
in other words, they broke your spirit.
So, in other words, they did what I couldn't do in round 1. Which makes them bigger jerks than me.
Yep.
So, at least, you know what's great about this? You, in 01, you recognize, you're like, oh, I know that guy. I heard him voice on a podcast. He's a jerk. I can stand up. These guys, you know, yeah, I will say they're bigger jerks than I am.
Yeah.
But obviously, they're more convincing at breaking it. Oh, and you might have just been exhausted at that point, Zach.
Yeah,
also true.
That's part of it. Is like people will try and break your spirit. Like they'll try and convince you all the time that your position is worse than it actually is. And it's so much easier said than done. But what you have to do is just think fast enough to like really evaluate the board every turn. And like when it's your first face to face tournament, you can't.
Yeah, it's really hard.
It's okay. You can't possibly, because they will bluster, they will fast talk, they will just be like, no, because you're here in this thing, and so they're going to be over the stalemate line in 15 seconds, and so
what are you going to do? Really? What are you doing? Why are you keeping us here?
Just vote yourself out. We're
hungry, we're tired, like, yeah. Let's just end this. Why are you kidding? Just be like, yep, I guess you shouldn't have signed up to play a game that lasts for 8 freaking hours, boys.
Yep.
Buckle up.
Yeah, exactly. Your response there is, when you get good at the game, your response to that becomes, come on, you know that's not true, because I can go here, 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 and here, and if you help me do this, we can do this instead, and we'll both get bigger, and blah, 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 blah.
Right, and you're wasting time now. Let's go, let's talk.
All that is a muscle.
Yeah,
it's just like one of those muscles that, like, especially after a long weekend and after you've had your butt kicked a couple of times, like that muscle is just it's not there. But I mean,
like that it was there round 1.
Yeah,
that's what I think.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
So I'm glad Zach's coming back, because round 1, he had it. He knew exactly what to do. He had the tools to do it.
No,
a little tired by round 2, but
definitely. Yeah,
but just keep doing that.
No, I don't know. It's like I liked this email because it sort of illustrated, like, it reminded me, God, it was hard. Like, I think I've said before on the show, like, I remember so many times just going after a tournament or after a round of a tournament and just be like, God, those guys just kicked my butt. How did they do that? And luckily I had Jake. I had like a friend who I was getting into the tournament scene with at the same time. And like, we'd just go like afterwards and get a drink and just be like, oh yeah. And then he said this and that was BS. Wait a minute. Oh no. And then he totally knew exactly what I was going to do. Sort of puzzling through like all of the tricks that people pulled on us and just going, well, they're not going to do that again. Or next time I'll try that on somebody else.
Right,
And that's the only way to do it.
The last thing on this email I want to say, there's a, it says two things to us. It says, Nathan, I hope the next time we can be an ally. I hope so too, Zach, because, you know, I don't hold grudges because I can't remember games.
Yeah.
And Eric, thanks for pep talk during your cigarette break late in round 2, which you're actually really good at. You're always there.
I remember
there.
That.
And that ties into what you just said. If, for all you new players out there, and we're going to talk about this more after the emails, in the context of house games. If you're at a tournament or a house game, everyone wants to talk about the game afterwards.
Yeah.
Pick a person that you had good rapport with, whether you won or you lost, and sit down. And just take the time, have a drink, have a snack, get some food, you're probably starving. And just break down everything that, because honestly, diplomacy players love to talk. That's why we're playing the game, right?
Right.
So
otherwise we'd be playing crayon trains.
Yeah, we'd be playing Go or something.
Yeah.
So take the time to do that. Do not do this thing where you kind of go out with everybody and don't talk about it and just have some beer and don't, you know, okay, I'm gonna leave the game behind. Until you're at the point where you don't need that anymore.
Yeah.
Exactly what Eric described with Jake is the best thing to do, is to really take every opportunity to just like grind it down right then. Because honestly, most people, a couple days later, gonna forget. I don't have no idea how many games I've played, but it's in the hundreds.
Yeah.
And there's just no way for me to remember after an exhausting tournament what I did 5 games ago.
Yeah.
So. Do it right then and there, and it's really, really helpful because you get to, you're like, oh, I totally didn't see that.
Yeah.
And it still happens later on. I did this at DixieCon. I sat down with somebody afterwards, and I really said, what would it have taken? Let's go turn by turn.
Mm-hmm.
Where was it that was a point of no return that I couldn't get you to turn anymore? Where was there any way I could have done it? And it was like, we seriously just like thought it was interesting.
Yeah.
Let's break this down. Yeah. Was there a point? And we identified one season mm-hmm. where we're like, okay, if you had said this, I was in a mental place where I might have gone for that.
Yeah, and then you can at least walk away going, God, I should have done that.
Yeah, should have done that.
Next, it sort of builds the muscle next time.
Yeah, builds the muscle. Yeah. And I think that's really important when you're starting out, and it continues to be important as you progress as a player. Yeah. Like, you know, one of the great things about this game is I'm still learning.
Yeah.
And it shows in my mediocre performance.
Yeah, right. We've probably gotten worse at it, actually.
I know.
Our muscles have atrophied.
Yeah, well, we're not playing enough. Yeah. That's the problem.
Yeah, that's true. Problem. So, but maybe we could have some house games to...
Yeah, maybe we should have some house games. You know what I need to know? They're so hard to set up.
Yeah.
Let's talk about it.
In our unnamed segment after this.
Bam! Wah!
Okay,
so what I wanted to do here is I think the best thing to do is I want to talk about our experiences.
Yeah.
Because we've been going to house games for
whenever,
13, 15, 20 years, something like that. I don't know how long you've been doing them.
I mean, well, I guess I got to go back to the weird house that's sort of a house and sort of a business where we actually met. Me and Nathan.
Oh, yeah, let's start there.
That was sort of a creepy house game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It creepy's was, too strong, yeah. But it was a little weird.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, but now I have to explain it, I guess, because I mentioned it, but there actually was this guy's house that he turned into, like, his business where he'd, like, charge you $3 to go into his house and play games.
And it's an entire house.
And it really was a house. He just, like, turned the living room and the downstairs into gaming areas or whatever. And I heard that there was a diplomacy game once a month there, and that was, like, the first time that I, like, went out in search of a face-to-face game. And it was, you know... It was a solid spot for diplomacy. You know, nothing special about it. It was good because, I mean, one of the things that was good about it is that the guy that was running it was, like, really organized and really good at harassing people.
Yes.
Which is, you know, that's I guess one of the points I wanted to make here.
And we're going to talk about that a lot.
Yeah. But, I don't know, I guess I went on a tangent there because I was just thinking, like, house games, well, yeah, that's how long I've been going to house games is since the first face-to-face game I played with strangers. You know,
yeah.
I'd played with friends before that, but...
And those are the same ones for me. We would go to that, it was called MSG, mm-hmm. Metro Seattle Gamers mm-hmm. Club, and, you know, we would pay a couple of bucks... just to maintain the rent and the power and the whatnot.
Yeah.
And it would, the two things that were nice about it was a dedicated space just for gaming, which meant, you know, you didn't have someone opening up their home.
Yep.
And which can be a barrier.
Yep.
You know, wives and girlfriends sometimes.
Or husbands, boyfriends, other times. Yeah.
Whatever, partners.
Yeah.
Roommates. Don't always appreciate a horde of people coming by and playing diplomacy for, like, a long time.
Yeah.
Eating a bunch of food, tracking in dirt, you know, making a mess of the place. And so what was nice about this is it was a dedicated space.
Yeah.
And the other thing about it was, because there was a dedicated space, you had somebody that was willing to gather somebody together once a month. And we did it every month
mm-hmm.
for months there.
Mm-hmm.
Months
sometimes
and years.
Sometimes he'd get, like, two boards, sometimes one.
Usually one, but sometimes two. And so that was a good experience.
Yeah. So I guess the lesson to take from that one, since we're on the topic, is just, have the space.
Yeah. You know, first thing, try and find a space. Now, it could be somebody's house that just has a, you know, that works, you know, they have a garage or something.
And remember, diplomacy takes up a lot more space than most games. If you think you have the space, you don't have the space. Double check, you know.
Yeah. You need, like, a lot of space.
Have three rooms.
Easy.
For one board, you know, like, because
people, or outside,
yeah,
or outside
a porch
space. Yeah.
Or a thing, or an upstairs,
and know that people are going to be in and out.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's an important part. The next one that I, you know, I'm just going to go in order. So the next ones that you and I went to, mm-hmm. Was all you. It was up at that bar at Canterbury.
Yeah.
Where we, you were like, oh, I've been playing here for years, and I showed up to a game because I'd met you.
Well, it was years, but yeah.
Well, you had done it many times before. You were like, oh, we have some friends here and whatnot.
Yeah.
And so I came to a game, and I was like, oh, this is great, because this particular bar, and this has worked in I know a lot of people, a lot of clubs have done this, had a lot of space.
It's huge.
And it's a huge space, and they welcomed gamers to come mm-hmm. by, and as long as you were buying stuff, and we certainly were,
yeah,
it was fine for us to wander around, be there for 5-6 hours, be unobtrusive, mm-hmm. and again, we had the space.
Yeah, if you're going to do this sort of thing in a public space, make sure that the people there are okay with it.
Yeah.
Don't just, I mean, it if might sound obvious, check. It might sound duh, but don't just show up with a box of diplomacy and 7 people and just be like, yeah, we're just going to set up here and play for 8 hours. And
yeah.
Don't mind us standing in front of the restroom talking about Bulgaria.
Yeah.
You know,
like, don't mind us.
Yeah.
And if it's a sports bar, check the sports schedule because.
Right. we've made that mistake before.
Whoops.
Yep. Yep.
And so I've done that in a number of cities. Portland, we've done diplomacy in bars before. Portland, we've gone down to people's houses before.
Yep.
So that's been good. I once did it at like a conference room that somebody had access to for a house game.
Yeah.
All of those work, and the consistent thing there is the space.
Space, yeah. Just a lot of it. However much you think you need more.
Yeah, always.
Yeah. And needless to say, if a decent portion of your gaming group is under 21, the bar thing isn't an option.
Not going to work.
And restaurants...
Don't like it.
Probably not, because they don't want you there.
Unless you happen to have, like... I mean, we in Seattle are blessed enough to have, like, a gamer... Not bar, like a gamer space. It's a huge...
Yeah. They're getting more popular. They're sort of like popping up all over the place.
Ballard has some, like, we have several in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think they're, you know, that movement is going forward. Sometimes game shops. I've played house games in game shops.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's what we did in New York, actually, when I was living there. And Brian Shelton and I were trying, and Chris a little bit, we're trying to run some house games there. So we just played on the upstairs of a game shop. And you didn't even have to, I mean... We may have told them we were going to do that, but they didn't care. We were totally welcome to.
Yeah.
Just, you know, as long as we weren't, like, tramping on the MasterCard players trying to, like, run around and
yeah, as long as you weren't making it, you know, sort of being intrusive.
Diplomacy is a little noisy.
Yes.
Compared to crayon trains, which is now my...
Which apparently is tonight's meme.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Crayon trains. It's a little bit noisy, so... Just, you know your environment a little bit so that you're not pissing everybody around you off.
And I'm going to say this a couple times, but I know this sounds obvious.
Yeah.
And a lot of what we say is obvious. But you would be shocked.
Oh, yeah.
How many times this is not executed very well.
Oh, yeah.
And
I've gone to house games that were, like, in somebody's tiny apartment.
And it's like, there's no place. There's like, you're playing Wilson. Like, you're playing right around a board. It's like, we could talk by whispering each other sweet nothings in each other's ears.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
It is not working.
Even your house one time, I remember standing in the men's room negotiating, like standing in the bathroom. Like,
yep.
We
tried to do it at my house. My house is way too small for diplomacy.
Yep.
We made that mistake once or twice.
Yep.
We were like, it was fine, but it was
in the bathroom.
Yeah, in the bathroom. Because I have a lot of little rooms.
Yeah.
It kind of works, but you end up in the toilet, so that doesn't work so well.
Yep.
So just, you know, the idea is, like, if you're planning this out, this write this stuff down, really think about it, and, mm-hmm. you know, the reason to be so scrupulous about this is the complaint that everyone has, like, oh, it's so hard to get 7 people together. It is really hard to get 7 people together. And once you get that critical mass, you have that one chance to get them to come back again.
Yeah.
So you really need to maximize those opportunities.
So put some thought into the space, for sure. Just remember, diplomacy is a more mobile game than any other board game you play, and it's a more boisterous game than any other game you play. So just find it.
Right.
Yeah.
And I know that, you know, there are a couple of models of really good... house game sort of building of hobbies. So there's a couple ways to build a hobby. Mm-hmm. You can build a group in a place around an event.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can build it more around house games. And then the house games sort of culminate in an event. There have been a couple of places, DC, Portland, most recently Chicago, mm-hmm. And to some small extent, you did it in New York for a little while,
yeah,
and in the Bay Area for a little while.
Yep.
And all of those places did a really good job, and obviously, you know, in Seattle as well. I shouldn't crap on that. Did a really good job of creating this sort of like reoccurring monthly thing. This is what we do. This is what we do. This is what we do. And that's
first
what you
Saturday.
Need.
First Saturday.
Right. Just... You need a rhythm and you need a predictability to it. Mm-hmm. There's just no other way to do it because it's, you know, think of it just like a business. Like if you want a bakery or a coffee shop and you're only open whenever you freaking feel like it,
yeah,
no one's ever going to drop by.
Or like if you only make a podcast, like just everyone's sometimes it's like, once every 3 months.
I think a lot of people, I've seen a lot of people try this,
yeah,
you know, and I've tried to, you know, mentor a little bit or give my advice a little bit on it.
Yeah.
Having hosted dozens and dozens and dozens of house games. What I think people don't really understand at the outset, and I think this is important to realize,
mm-hmm.
you know, just because you take the time to craft that email and send it out and do a little bit of work, like a modicum of work, really.
Mm-hmm.
You send out an email. People really expect players to just show up.
Yeah.
And they're not going to, because they have no faith or no reason to have any faith that it's actually going to happen.
Yeah. That's another special sort of fluky thing about diplomacy, is that, like, if people start to get skeptical...
Right.
About, like, am I really going to sign up, not make any other plans on a Saturday afternoon, and then find out that there's no game?
Right.
And yeah.
And so you have to have, you have to have time after time after time again, 6 months of doing games. And some of those initial 6 months, you're not going to fill out a board.
Mm.
But if you have a big enough group that you're talking to...
Mm-hmm.
People are going to watch for 6 months that people are having games,
mm-hmm.
and you write up the game afterwards. Like, this is what happened. We didn't have quite enough this time, but hopefully the next time we had a great game anyway. We found somebody at the bar to play with us. We, you know, we had a great time. This person's going to come back. You know, like,
and going back to like my MSG thing, it was like me discovering, like, holy crap, they really do play once a month.
Right.
This is really happening. Awesome. Okay.
I'll be here every month.
Because this is a thing that happens every month, and I'm just going to go to it and play next time it happens. Not like, it wasn't like me going out on the internet and there was somebody who was like, hey, dudes, who wants to come to my house and play Diplomacy sometime? It was like, this is already there and it's already happening. And so, you know, if you can obviously find six other people that can start that right away.
Great.
But maybe you can't, and you'll have to sort of take some shots at people and hope. And here's another thing that I just thought of that I hope I'm not derailing your train.
You're not. No, go on.
I'm
all out of crayons.
There's... I see what you did there. There's, like, you'd be surprised if your city where you're trying to start a regular house game is, say... 5 hours away from a city that has established Diplomacy junkies in it, tournament players who, like, you will be surprised. Try and invite a couple of those guys. Be like, hey, we're really trying to get a house game thing started. We've only got 5 for next Saturday. No chance I could convince you to drive 5 hours just to be there, could I? You will. Trust me.
Like, you never know.
If you live within 9 hours of Matt Shields. There's one more.
There's definitely guys that will do it. And, like, asking also builds so much cred.
Yeah.
Like, just ask. Just ask. Send an email. Do not expect that an email blast. Like, I'm going to email a list is going to have any result.
Yeah.
You need to have personal contact. You need to be like... show that you care enough, like, oh, I really would like you to come. It would be great. We'll have a great time.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, people don't believe it. And why should they? Like, you look at crap on the internet all day long.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why would you believe it's going to manifest? It's going to mm-hmm. happen.
Yep.
So, and I will say, going back to what we talked about earlier, I will almost always encourage people to find a neutral place that doesn't belong to somebody. Because going to someone's house mm-hmm. that you don't know is more intimidating than going to a public place.
Yeah, and I agree. It's weird.
you know?
It's just like, a little, I mean, it's an additional barrier you don't need between you and a diplomacy game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've never really thought about that, but that's a good point.
There's always going to be somebody who's like, oh man, I'd like to play, but I don't know who this guy is.
Yeah, like, somebody might have to, like, explain it to their significant other, just be like, wait, you're going over to this stranger's house to do what?
Yeah,
like, you know, like, it's a lot easier to explain, like, I'm going to a bar to play a game.
Yeah, or I'm going to this coffee shop to play a game, or I'm going to this weird building that's a game house. I'm like, whatever it is, I would strongly encourage you to, or a game shop is actually ideal. Shop's ideal.
Yeah, and especially, like, if you can find a neutral location that's, like, in somewhere central to possible players. Like, that's another thing. Sometimes I'll see one that's, like, house game in, you know, Auburn, or, like, somewhere 25 miles out of Seattle or something. And like, at least if somebody lives in Auburn, like, you know, Seattle's in between, like, a lot of suburbs in all directions or whatever, so make everybody go to Seattle, and it, like, then they're all traveling equidistant instead of some people traveling insanely far from one suburb to another. Anyway.
Right.
Centrally located.
Centrally located is a good idea. And so the last thing that I think is been all throughout is the reason these things work, all of the places that I listed, is because there is a person or persons that dedicate their time to doing it. I don't want to say leader, it's not a leader, it's just a point person. And it's a point person that is just, has the dedication to do it. And you cannot get that consistency of doing it once every 6 months, once every month for a year, unless you have a person that is willing, or a group of people that are willing to do it consistently, because this is why you can't get something off the ground.
Yep.
So you just need somebody. If you're going to be that person, be that person, but know that it's a commitment.
Yeah, and you can trade off, actually. Sure. If you have, like, two buddies who are really committed along with you, take turns being the point man, you know, every third
absolutely.
Game.
Absolutely.
But when it's you, you
just don't. It's just like a relay race in that case. If you drop the baton, you've invalidated 3 months of work, because now there's all those potential players who think, oh well, maybe there won't be a game. You have to really make it feel like something happens to everyone.
Yeah.
You know, and we've talked about this, the basic stuff before, like set up an email list, set up a Facebook, set up a meetup, whatever you want, whatever social media flavor is your preference.
Yep.
But a way where people know what's going on and that they can see easily, oh, this happened this month. Oh, this happened this month. Oh, this happened this month. Oh, this is probably going to happen. I guess I will dedicate a Saturday to it.
Yep. I have one other one that I thought of. You don't have to be friends with absolutely everybody on your list or whatever, but it sure doesn't hurt to, if you want to keep somebody coming back, unless you hate them or something, it really doesn't hurt to try and be a little bit social, like, either after the game or, like, even some other time, you know, like, if you're trying to organize this thing on Facebook, make them a Facebook friend, right? And then, like, maybe get to know them a little bit as human beings, or feel free to, when you're emailing back and forth trying to get them to come to this game or that game, say, hey, how's your dog? And you're not, you know, not just choosing them, but because it's, like, fun to make new friends, you know?
Well, yeah, obviously, you have a shared interest. Like, and so,
I mean, like, just look at the DC guys. Like, they were all just sort of met through playing Diplomacy House games, and they're all, like, soul brothers now.
Yeah.
You know, they're, like, this, like, family out there, and of guys that have known each other for, like, 15 years, and they all basically met through house games. And,
right.
And that not only does that make the house game better, that makes the life better, and that's what this thing's all about. You know? So, be as social as you can. Don't just be like, show up at 2 o'clock, leave at 8 o'clock, you know.
And get the hell out.
Get the hell out. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, no, it should be. And you're right. It's good to bring that up. Like, definitely, this is a friendly thing. So.
Especially diplomacy. I mean, play train crayons. If you just want to, like, show up and draw the trains with the crayons and be done with it. You know, like, diplomacy, it's all about being social. Like, that's who the game ought to appeal to.
Right.
Which is another whole tangent about,
yeah, we're not, like, going to go down that road.
Appealing to non-gamers via that fact about diplomacy. But that really is probably a whole episode.
Right. But so in sum, just to wrap it up.
No summing up yet. We forgot our emailer's question. He wanted to know a little bit about food.
Oh, no, I think that's great. I've been to... if bribing food with food works, do it. That's the other reason to do it at a... like a bar, if everyone's over 21, or like someplace where there's food nearby, it's like, oh, don't worry, there's going to be food. Otherwise, you know, provide food because it's going to be like 6 hours.
Yeah, yeah, and you're not completely obliged to sort of like bake a gourmet feast for everyone.
Yeah, probably more
people will come. You can ask people to bring food, but like put a little thought into like don't just tell everybody to bring a bag of chips because then you'll have 19 bags of chips and everyone will like pass out from carbohydrate poisoning by the end of it. You know. Like, but give a little thought to, like, you know, if you're not going to be able to feed everybody, fine, just tell them that beforehand.
Right, because what you don't want to do, you honestly, at a house game, you kind of do not want to have a big, like, stopping. You don't want to have a big break, because it's really likely you're not going to come back again.
Yeah. But if you're the sort that feels like, you know, like, putting out a big spread... Go for it.
Like,
people will be really happy with that, or try and encourage people to, you know, bring stuff or whatever. Have a plan.
Yeah, definitely think about the fact that people will need to eat.
Food, beverages, that sort of thing. Yeah. There was that. I guess that was... Oh, and he also asked in the email a little bit about, like, is it cool to, like, hand out an award? Yeah, it's cool.
It's cool, sure.
Like, people love that stuff. I remember the guy that would organize the MSG games, he had, like, all kinds of crazy, like, sort of stats that he kept, and, like, he'd just keep track of people, like, what they did, which countries did the best, who did best with this, and, like, even, like, had his own little, like, rating system, and the rating system, I mean... I could have taken or left the actual rating system, but the fact that he like put forth that effort
and people got into it.
And people got into it. Yeah. The fact that he could actually like look and say, wow, since we've been doing this event, nobody's had that big of an Italy by 1906 or something like that. So if you're that kind of person, people do love that stuff. And if you want to like every once in a while sort of crown somebody like chief of your house game based on that's a bonus.
Right, we did that in Seattle 1 year. A horse race we did.
Yeah, that's right.
That 1 year.
Just don't make so much work for yourself that you don't actually feel like hosting the games.
Right.
But so just, if you're the kind who feels like cooking or keeping stats or handing out trophies, all that stuff is genuinely appreciated.
Right.
I can say that.
Like, and I think if it's just you starting out, like start out with the idea that you're going to get some deputies or people that are going to like join you in this crusade, because the moment you can share the burden, you're going to want to.
Yeah. And which actually makes me think of yet another thing that we didn't say anything about yet, which is of course you should be like, I guess maybe we talked as if this went without saying, but you should be out there, like after the games, during the games, before the games, an email, whatever, saying, hey, do you have any friends that you think you might want to bring next time? Because it's not always the first guy that shows up that's going to be the addict. You know,
right.
Sometimes it's his buddy who's like, you know, yeah, I'd like to check it out. And then he's the one who's like, this game's awesome.
Yeah.
And the original guy doesn't keep showing up.
Right. And you just never know. Like, there are just people that this game just takes.
Yeah.
And you're looking for those people and all of their friends.
I can think of a couple times where, like, the guy shows up and then like he's been coming to this thing for weeks, and then one time he like brings his girlfriend because like he had plans with her that day, and he was like, oh, why don't you come play a game with me or something, and then she loves it and he eventually gets out of it. There's no planning it. Like, the guy that hangs out at the game store may not be the guy, but like his brother might be. So be sure to just make everybody feel really welcome. And feel welcome to bring more people next time.
Yeah, come on down. It's not a private event.
Yeah.
Yeehaw. So,
okay, you were going to sum up.
I was going to sum up. I'm going to sum up.
Sum away.
I think the 3 points are, think about the location.
Mm-hmm.
A lot. Preferably do it in a public location if you can.
Mm-hmm.
Understand, like, if you know you don't want to be spending money or you don't want to whatever, but a public location will allow more people. It will remove that barrier, and it will relieve the burden of food.
Yep,
most likely. Second, think about how much work you're willing to put into this, and understand that you're not going to get people to just come on a dime. It's going to take work. You got to build it. And you need, I think, above all, a consistent sort of product. Like, even if you don't fill the game out, Yep. I have absolutely watched house games where they could only get six people, cancel the day of, and say, don't bother coming.
Yeah, not good.
That is a terrible thing to do.
Not good.
Get together anyway. This is a bunch of... Play a different game if you have to.
Yeah.
Or play some sort of variant of it. Or try and get some... Whatever you can. Don't... Do not cancel the game.
Yeah.
It's just not going to help you. You're going to have to start all over. And, third, think about, you know, we mentioned the food, the other logistics. Think about, you know, if you want to do a rating system or something, you like to get people to come back, feel welcome, just figure out ways of getting people to come back and do that personal touch.
Yeah.
I think that's it. Did I miss anything?
No, you're good.
Yeah?
You're clean. Clean show. Solid effort.
Well, you know what we should do, Eric? I felt pretty good. You want to do this maybe again soon?
Yeah, we could do another podcast sometime. Okay. We were going to have a guest today, but I just really wanted to throw Mark Zoffel under the bus for not
he being did on say, today. Yeah.
Yeah, he said he's crazy busy, which sounds like, you know, something I'd
sometimes.
Say.
Yeah. So. That sounds like an excuse I'd use.
Yeah, exactly. So we are hoping by the next show that Mark Zoffel will come and talk about WAC and his illustrious career of being the secret gnome of Zurich that controls all of diplomacy.
Right. And that WAC tournament will be in January, the third weekend of January, the 20-something coming up. It will be the last WAC, and I'm going to plug this every time we have an episode, so just get used to it, guys. Buckle up. Definitely consider coming. There's going to be a roast at the beginning of it. On the Thursday, it's going to be four rounds over 3 days. It's going to be some of the best diplomacy you've ever played and some of the greatest...
For sure.
Greatest high-fiving awesomeness that is going to happen in 2014. It's going to happen right in the beginning of 2014.
I totally missed my opportunity to make a joke about how Mark Zoffel was on Crayon Traincast.
next time. All right, guys. We'll talk to you soon.
You have been listening to Diplomacy Cast. Thanks, everyone, for joining us.
Wasn't it fun?
It was great.
I had a great time.
Yeah, definitely. For Nathan Barnes, I'm Eric Mead. Signing off. We'll talk to you next time.
For Eric Mead, I am a giant 13-foot-tall chocolate banana.
I was just trying to sound like a radio guy. That's what I get. Bye, everyone.